I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. Preschool teachers, according to an article that we read in The Atlantic, earn less than tree trimmers. The article goes on to say that science says early learning is crucial, but teacher pay suggests otherwise. Child care workers, nearly all of them women, earn less than tree trimmers and pest control workers, hairdressers, and janitors. Our first guest this hour says it is an unjust situation. We'll talk about why they earn so little money, even though the advances in brain science suggest all this learning takes place in the first few years of a child's life, and it is so important to how you succeed in life. So why is there this huge gap in being rewarded for work that is incredibly important? We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour and welcome your phone calls. Professor Marcy Whitebook is the director of the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at the University of California at Berkeley. She taught in early childhood programs for many years and was the founding executive director of the Washington-based Center for Child Care Workforce. She has led many large-scale early childhood research projects, including the National Child Care Staffing Study, which brought attention to low wages and also high turnover rate of child care workers. Later in the hour, we will be joined by the executive director of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association. Ruth Schmidt will join us, and we'll hear about programs in Wisconsin, actually, particularly the Young Star program, which is working to make sure that the standards are very high for early childhood education. Here's how you reach our conversation this hour. Of course, we're particularly interested in hearing from those of you who work in early childhood education or in the field of education to help us understand why the pay is so low in this important work. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we love to read your messages, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that is @KDunn Show. So feel free to join us any way you would like. Marcy, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to chat with you.
Yeah, our pleasure. Why don't we first talk about the importance of those early years of life in terms of laying a groundwork for your adulthood? Those years are crucial. We've known that for some time now.
Right. And I think intuitively we've known it for a long time, but in the last 25 or so years, we've had just incredible advances in the brain science and understanding that the most rapid period and sort of critical part of development occurs in the first few years of life. And it's really where the structure of the brain gets established and sets the foundation for future learning and well-being in young children. And so we have this science now that says that how important those years are, and what's particularly important are the adults in children's lives, because it's through children's interactions with adults that they are able to feel safe, explore the world, and sort of take advantage of their enormous learning potential. So when development goes awry in that period, it's not that it can't be remedied to some extent, but it just makes so much more sense to get it right from the start. And that really means that we have to think about whether or not the people who are working with young children, you know, are sort of have the skills and knowledge and the support to engage in the kind of interactions and facilitate the kind of learning that all young children need.
And certainly, Marcy, we've seen a radical change in how our young children are being taken care of in this country. Most women are outside the home working. It's a two-earner family right now, so many, many millions of Americans are using childcare in some form to help develop their young children's minds.
That's right. And so there were about 2 million people whose job it is to care for and educate young children each day in the United States. And there's about 12 million children who have been entrusted to the care of those early educators. And I think that, you know, it's funny, when I first started in the field many years ago and was, you know, thinking about these issues, really the debate was, you know, should women be working? You know, should mothers be working? Should, you know, you know, are, is childcare good or bad for children? Well, we've resolved that. The issue, you know, the issue of should our parents working is not really an issue anymore. It's like people are, you know, people are working to survive. But what is an, or most families are, but what the other, the issue about, child care for young children or early learning experiences, it's not whether or not they have something, you know, they're away from their parents. It's really the quality of the time that they are in child care or in preschool that really makes a difference. And when it's good, it's great for kids. And so the issue is, like, how do we make it good for kids? And that's where you get to the early educator, because the quality of care children receive is directly linked to the knowledge and skills and well-being of the people who are doing the work. So as we've come to understand all of this about development, and we've, you know, seen the changes in the way our families, you know, organize their lives, and, you know, how society has changed, we really haven't done anything to sort of restructure or update our early care and education system to in alignment with the science and the reality of people's lives. So in a way, what we have is all this 21st century knowledge and expectations for early childhood, and we have a system that's really rooted in the 20th century. And I would add, we basically have pay levels that are, you know, weren't good in the 20th century, and they're not much, you know, they haven't changed much since then. So I think that's really the issue. There's a disconnect with what we're sort of hoping for or thinking we need around early care and education and what we're willing to invest in it.
So why is it that child care workers, nearly all of them, something like 98% are women, earn less, as this article suggests, than tree trimmers, pest control workers, hairdressers, and janitors?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do about the way we have structured early care and education in the United States. So if you think about K through 12 education, we assume that children, it's a public good. It's a right for every child to have a public education from kindergarten, first grade on. And we don't ask parents to cover the cost of that care. Now, parents might choose to do that, or parents, you know, there's certainly differences in the quality of education that unfortunately, you know, overlay with income to a certain extent. But no child in the United States is denied a place in a second grade classroom because their parents, you know, didn't get a subsidy or their parents couldn't afford care. But in early childhood, we basically don't define it as a public good. So although there is some public investment on the part of the government, it's primarily directed towards, you know, the most low-income families. But even at that, there's not enough money in the system to cover everybody who's eligible. So we're mostly relying on parents to cover the cost of early care and education, which makes it very expensive because it's a very labor-intensive industry. So even though parents are paying way too much and shouldering so much of the burden, what parents pay doesn't really cover the full cost of services if we were to pay people a living wage and to reward people for their investment in education. So we really have asked this group of women to subsidize the system because we as a society haven't decided it's, you know, something that we should all share the burden. And of course, the reason we, I think, have gotten away with that is because people don't think of it as skilled work. It's been primarily filled by women. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons that have sort of allowed that status quo to persist. But, you know, I think it comes back to that we haven't embraced early care and education as something that we as a society need to invest a lot more in. We want to talk about its benefits, but not about its costs.
And we're also putting a big burden on families. I guess the average is about $10,000 a year.
Terrible.
You're paying for care. That puts people in a real financial bind.
Right. I mean, if you imagine a world where, which is true in most of the other industrialized countries, is much more like this. If you imagine a world where parents were only paying a small portion of their income, or a predictable small portion of their income, or nothing for early care and education, those families would have a lot more disposable income. You would probably relieve poverty in many families that have young children. So we would take a lot of burden off families. And at the same time, if you did it so that you were investing in the jobs and making these, valuing these jobs like we value other teaching jobs, you would then be, ensuring that people who pursued education would stay in the field, their own families, you know, could be financially secure. So we could solve a lot of problems, and probably the biggest thing we would solve was we could build a system that would much more reliably deliver high-quality early care and education to all children.
Well, it certainly benefits the workforce, too. It benefits the country as a whole. Why don't we do it?
That's a complicated question. I mean, I think that it's, you know, we've been sort of caught in this, I would say vise of saying, like, you know, there's no money. I mean, I think there is money. It's a question of where we want to, you know, invest our money. I think there's been, a sense that somehow we could get quality child care if we just made some small changes here and there, and sort of the rest would fall into place, and we don't have to invest more money into the system. And so, you know, I think a lot of it is about public will and money, and I think that people who use the services are using them at a time in their lives where they're incredibly burdened. They have young children, they're working, they're spending so much money, they're trying to deal with housing, other things, so they're not particularly an organized voice for better services. And I think on the worker side, you know, most people who work in early childhood aren't affiliated with a professional organization or a union, and they too are working maybe one or two jobs. Many have families. A lot of them are going back to school. So really the voices of the people who are suffering the most from the system, the adults, the parents, and the workers, are, you know, relatively quiet given the extent of the problem. And, I mean, it's not a fault of theirs. It's just sort of the nature of the situation. And, of course, the people most disadvantaged by children, you know, don't have a voice. So I think that, you know, it's really a question of, as our country sort of thinks about issues of income inequality and economic insecurity and these issues, this is part of the mix, and this is really one of the remedies that could address a lot of the problems we have. And so, you know, there's a bit of hope now because there is more talk about remedies around these issues, but we obviously have a lot of division in our country about whether or not, you know, we want to embrace these kind of policies. So until we get a critical mass of people saying, yes, we should, you know, we're going to have a problem. But what's interesting about it is it's not like a lot of other issues. Like, they've done some polling. National Association for the Education of Young Children did some polling. There was some polling done out here in California. Many, many voters think that there should be more public investment in early childhood, and actually some of it should go to the people doing the work. So it's also an issue of, even though we've got a lot of people favoring it, we don't have, our political leaders have not lined up behind this, and of course, then we have the stalemates in many of our political systems about moving things that are important to many people, but we're still not seeing them change.
Well, it also makes sense that you would get, if you put more public investment in training of the teachers, that you would have more people, and we've realized now, without doubt, that this is very important work, and you need to know what you're doing. You have to be educated on this. So if you're not being paid very much money, very, very little money to do this kind of work, I would imagine there's not a great incentive to go to college to study early childhood education, because, why?
People who graduate with a major in early childhood education have the lowest lifetime earnings of any college graduate, so that it's hardly that's not a good recruitment and retention strategy.
Right.
But I think the other issue that's sort of interesting about this is that there's two points. So one point is that people doing the work really do want training and education, but they also want to be rewarded for the investment of their time.
Sure.
And they need support to be able to go to school. Many of them are working full-time. They can't just, you know, leave early so they could go take a class. So you see there's a hunger for people to get education and training, but then they don't do it because they know there is no reward at the end, or they can't and it's not made accessible to them, or they do it and then they find that at the end there's no premium for their investment in their education and training. So what we end up doing is we encourage people to go back to school. People are doing it, and I think, you know, Ruth will talk a little bit about some of the changes you've seen in Wisconsin, and they'll do that, but then there's no reward, so we often lose those people. So it's, in a way, you know, the we see policies where people are pouring, you know, we're investing in people to get education, but there's like, it's like putting our investment in a bucket with a hole in the bottom, because if we don't have anything to improve the jobs, people, understandably, as we all would, end up leaving often to find jobs where they can support themselves and their families. So I think we just have a, you know, a very crazy situation going on where we're encouraging people to get education, we're supporting people to get it, people are eager to get it. You know, people in the workforce have much higher levels of education than they're often required to have, but we're doing nothing to really keep them and to reward them and to really value the complexity of their work. And I think most people doing the work understand how complex it is and how challenging it is and want that education and training so they can understand development better and understand and build their skills around facilitating learning in young children. But we don't give them, beyond maybe an opportunity for some, for education and training, the other things they need that will help children succeed. And so we just have a very broken system. It's very inefficient, in a sense, in terms of our public investments.
Well, that's on the table this hour, the broken early childhood education system. Why is it that even though we know there's been so much research in the past decade, really, on the importance of learning all that happens in the brain the first 3 years of life and a little bit beyond that, that it lays a groundwork for what the rest of your life will be, how well you'll do in school, how healthy even you're going to be. So why is it that we know this, but most early childhood educators make so little money that many of them are eligible for public benefits, and yet a lot of the burden falls on parents, so this affects so many people because you're paying $10,000 a year on average for some kind of early childhood care education. The system, would you say, is broken? What do we do about it? There are a lot of you in this situation, either as educators or as parents. What do you think? Here's our phone number. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR, and the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Our first guest is Marcy Whitebook, and she is the director of the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at the University of California at Berkeley. A little later, we'll find out exactly what's going on here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, lots and lots of phone calls coming in for our guest. We're talking about early childhood education and the huge pay gap, and we start our calls with John in Beloit. Hi, John.
Good morning. I think one of the key factors is that, well, I'm 47, I have twins, and me and my wife, I consider to be very involved in our children's learning, A, B, C's, 1, 2, 3's, when they were very young. My grandparents were involved, my mother was involved. It was a lot of one-on-one. I think one of the problems with today, as you have college professors who get paid absorbent, I mean, it's not absorbent, but I mean, they make between $60,000 and $100,000 a year. They could make less, and we could employ more technical teachers to get more one-on-one time with youth. That's just an idea. I just want to float it out there. But I see that is one of the key factors with babies, and as we grow up and through our years, it's that one-on-one attention that makes some of the most, the greatest difference of all. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Marcy?
Well, I think one of the things that is true for so many families is that people are so burdened trying to make a living that, you know, we need to relieve the burden on families as well as on people who are providing care and including them for their own families. So I think, you know, I think good early childhood and taking the burden of sort of child care from families would allow families, and having paid parent leave, other things, would allow people more time to spend with children during these early years. So,
Right. Let's go next to Mark in northern Wisconsin is our next caller. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I guess my comment has to do with, I see the impact that good early childhood programming can make, but I call it the mom syndrome, because what do you pay moms? You don't pay moms anything. I mean, that sounds bad, and I think we're in part of that mentality about early childhood education.
It's like babysitting? That's how we perceive it, Mark?
I think at times that we do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in my neck of the woods, the way I look at it, there aren't a lot of opportunities in a rural setting for outside engagement and for, and we're expecting more and more from students when they come in, especially earlier in years. That's why I'm saying if you have a good early childhood program, if you make lots of gains, and statistics will show that out, that you can make those gains in those early years. But I still think we're stuck in that stigma of what do you pay mom?
Right. I think he's right, Marcy. Do you?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that we see anything to do with young children as something that, you know, is sort of mother's or maybe parents' responsibility. And we don't tend to see it as skilled work, you know, when you're doing it, you know, like, so, I mean, every family, I mean, I think that's part of the problem. It's like many people are involved with young children. So what's the difference between what parents are doing with young children versus people who are going to an early childhood program? And I would say, as someone who's been a teacher and was actually an infant toddler teacher, it's quite different to be in a, you know, working with a group of children and sort of figuring out how to address each of them individually while you're also tending to the group. And it takes a certain skills that are different than what you're doing at home. But I also think that we have, the science of child development has communicated to people a lot about what's going on in those early years. And so we're asking, you know, parents, and we're basically saying, you know, talk to your baby, be more engaged, your baby, these years are so important. But we're not necessarily providing the supports to parents or to people who are doing the work, you know, like paid parental leave would, or, you know, taking some of the burden off the costs of childcare, which would allow, you know, people to engage more with their children and be less stressed and sort of provide even more for our young children. So I think it's not just one problem. It's a sort of next, you know, it's a group of problems. And many of them stem from the fact that we think this is something that, you know, mothers should just do, and not thinking about what the lives of most mothers are with young children, you know, in 21st century America right now. So, you know, it's a complicated situation. I don't think there's one right way to, you know, sort of organize your family and, you know, sort of make decisions about child rearing. I think there's, you know, many ways people to do that, but in almost all ways we need more supports for families, and then more supports with better, you know, early childhood programs for families who choose those.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we haven't been specific enough and to talk about the benefits of really good programs during those early years of life. What are they, Marcy?
Well, I think what we see from the, I mean, you know, children are going to learn, because that's what children are sort of, we as humans are wired to do, and our brains are, you know, we're absorbing many things. But we do know that when children are in situations where they're, you know, engaged, where there's like stimulating conversation, lots of things to explore, you know, it's presented to children in, you know, in ways that are sort of appropriate for them to, you know, discover and learn things, that really strengthens their, you know, brain sort of capacity. And also when children are in a social setting with other people, they learn the skills of interacting with their peers and with other adults that are really a major, major portion of the readiness skills for, you know, for formal schooling at, you know, age five or whatever. So I think, you know, we have pretty strong evidence that when children are exposed to these enriching experiences, for all children, it really helps them off to a good start. But we also know for children who have less opportunity in their homes, or experience trauma, or have other issues going on, it really is a way to intervene and help children, to ensure that children don't fall behind their peers, so that when they enter school, they're really far behind. So, you know, I think that the benefits for young children are very clear. Certainly, children can, you know, be fine if they're not in the program, as long as they're having that kind of stimulating, supportive, and trusting, you know, experience. But we do know that when, for children who have those experiences, if the quality of the care is good, we see really, you know, we are putting them on a pathway to thriving and succeeding, which is what we want for everybody.
Yeah. We'll take one more call for you, and then we'll keep you on the line, and we will introduce the executive director of Wisconsin Early Childhood Association. Danielle in Saukville. Hi.
Hi. Wow. Thank you for talking about this. It's very important, and everything you have said is so smart, and I think, to me, it's just very common sense. I'm a mother of two. I work full-time, and so does my husband. So we've had two young children in daycare, and it's financially very hard and mentally very hard to have your children in daycare. But I agree. I think it's just common sense that we have to do this for early child care to have our children to succeed and to thrive in the community in the future. I see that they're definitely underpaid, and that worries me. The daycares that we have all follow state minimums. They have, you know, 4-to-1 in the baby room, and there was times when I felt like I couldn't even leave the baby room because there was 4 crying children mm-hmm. and 1 teacher, and I couldn't leave my child there until things settled down a little bit. I guess what I'm also looking for is I want to be a voice. I want to say something. I want to help change this. Is there some kind of resource online that we could, I don't know, sign up for or protest? I don't know what to do next.
Marcy?
Well, I think, thank you for your comments, and I'm glad you want to join the effort. I think, you know, and I think it is true that it is, you know, we sort of define sort of things at the minimum, and so often that's not as strong as we need it to be for young children. I think, you know, I think we can give you information. We have a report coming out next week that is looking at what's going on in different, in all the states around their early childhood policies. And so that's, I think that, you know, we can make that available to people. Maybe you can share that with people. But also, I think that there's groups out there that are, you know, trying to engage parents in these conversations. And so I think that, you know, and there's several groups out there. I know that they're national groups, but I think maybe Ruth might ask.
Yeah, Ruth
might be
will
able
definitely
to tell you what locally in Wisconsin would, you know, could be things. And I do really think all of us need to be making this an issue in the elections, whether they're, you know, early childhood policy is made at the federal, state, and local level, and I think that we really need to be asking our elected officials to weigh in on what's wrong with the system, you know, what they're planning to do about it, and really hold them accountable for coming up with solutions. So I would also say, you know, get engaged in the elections in your communities.
Mm-hmm. Make it an issue. Danielle, we'll find out what the Wisconsin situation is and how you can become involved here as we introduce our guest who will join Marcy. Ruth Schmidt is executive director of Wisconsin Early Childhood Association. She has, during her tenure, had WECA become a partner in the statewide implementation of Young Star program. We'll talk about that. Her bachelor's is from Grinnell, and she has extensive leadership in management consulting. She's actively involved with Wisconsin Early Learning Coalition, the National Birth to Five Policy Alliance, and the Peer Advocate Roundtable. Ruth, thank you very much for being with us, for joining Marcy. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Ruth.
It was lovely listening to your conversation.
Great. Can you help Danielle? She wanted to become involved. She perfectly described what so many families are going through right now and wants to affect change in the state of Wisconsin. How does she become involved in this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll put a plug in for my organization, Wisconsin Early Childhood Association. If you go to our website, which is wisconsinearlychildhood.org, mm-hmm. there is a drop-down menu for Get Involved where you can click on Advocacy, and it links you to an ability to sign up for our Forward for Kids pledge. The Forward for Kids campaign is a way for WECA to keep information in front of advocates in the state of Wisconsin who have said, I'm concerned, I'm willing to speak up, I'm willing to write a letter, I'm willing to stay informed. And so the Forward for Kids Pledge, which you can get to again at wisconsinearlychildhood.org, is a great way for you to continue receiving updates on core issues, on elections to pay attention to, on public policy issues that are surfacing, budget issues that are surfacing. And hopefully that will, Danielle, help to give you opportunities to be a voice, which is so critical in what we need in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit before we go back to phone calls about the YoungStar Wisconsin Child Care Quality Rating Program and Improvement System?
Sure. So the YoungStar Quality Rating Improvement System has been around since 2010. It was passed by the legislature in 2010 and implemented over the past 5 years. It is a five-star rating system, which essentially has different standards for different star levels. The standards are in the areas of staff qualifications in child care programs, health and safety, health and wellness measurements, curriculum and environment measurements, and professional practices, business operations of child care programs. And so in Wisconsin, Wisconsin's kind of unique. We have a very, very high participation rate of child care programs in our state's YoungStar system. We have probably over 75% of our regulated programs participate in YoungStar. And then they're rated on this five-star scale, and parents can access that rating information when you are looking to find child care. Or you're comparing child care programs, you want to learn more about them, you can go to the Department of Children and Families website and pull up just a wealth of data on programs and their YoungStar ratings and what areas they got their points in. It's a great tool for parents.
Yes, it is. Let's go back to phone calls. Jane in Monaco. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have been reading a lot lately about trends in senior care, and one thing I'm reading about is locating child care facilities within a senior care facility to give seniors an opportunity to interact with the children, give the children opportunities for one-on-one interaction, and it seems to be a beautiful advantage to both groups. I wonder if your guests could comment on that.
Sure. Whoever wants to start, I'd like to hear both of you comment. Marcy, you want to start?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know a ton about it, but it seems like a good thing to have opportunities for, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, you know, where the seniors have access to young children and vice versa. I mean, I think it's, I mean, I don't know, Ruth, if there are examples of that in Wisconsin.
Are there, Ruth?
Could not put probably names to those programs, but I believe there are at least one or two examples of that in Wisconsin. Again, I apologize. I don't know. I could probably look it up and get it to you, Kathleen, and you could put it on your website.
Okay. It does make sense, but then so many things need to be done that would make a lot of sense, right?
Yes.
So many things. Cheryl sends this email. And here it goes. I think men should spend 1 month in child care and they would understand what we need for our families. I spend thousands of dollars for quality child care in Milwaukee. My children are spending big dollars in Madison. It's time to get the men in our political environment to stop thinking it's a woman's job. When they grow up and participate in the raising of our children, maybe they will clearly understand how we need, capital letters, affordable child care. Time to be like Sweden. Ruth?
I love it. So our organization just had commissioned a workforce study in Wisconsin on the child care workforce that was done by COWS and the UW Survey Center. And looking at that data, which just came out recently, what we see is literally it's about less than 1% of people who work in the child care field are men. Clearly, there is a significant gender aspect to this issue and the whole issue of compensation and how, as a country, we go about paying for the care and education of our youngest children. I think that while I agree with the caller or the person who sent in the email, certainly looking at this issue of how do we keep men, fathers, dads more involved in fully understanding this issue, one of the things I think we see is that childcare is increasingly becoming, as we have more women in the workplace, and just as a little aside, in Wisconsin, Wisconsin is one of the top five states in the nation for having mothers in the workforce.
Is it?
Oh. It is. It's very high. It's over 70% of moms are in the workforce. And so we know that there are moms and dads that are sharing the responsibility for locating child care, determining the quality of that child care, understanding the cost of that child care. And I think that child care is becoming an issue where employers also are increasingly understanding that this isn't just a woman's issue. In order to employ people in different communities around the state, you have to have access. Businesses have to know that there is adequate access to affordable, high-quality
right.
child care, or people won't take the job.
Mm-hmm.
And anecdotally, we hear from employers across the state who are dealing with this exact issue. They want to hire entry-level workers into third-shift positions. There's no third-shift child care available. And so I think it does become an issue that in families, while probably it's still largely seen as mom's responsibility to figure this out, I think increasingly it's a shared responsibility. And I think in terms of parental leave types of policies, I think that's also something, as we see more of that take hold, that will be shared between moms and dads.
More phone calls in just a moment. We're talking about early childhood education, how important it is, and yet we don't pay the people who are doing that kind of work very much money. And those of us who need to use child care are paying a lot of money for child care. So it's obvious it's important. We're not valuing the people who do this, and it's a financial burden for those who need this service. We got problems here in this system. What do we do about it? Well, welcome more phone calls at 800-486-8655. Jean, thanks very much for your thought-provoking call with us, continuing the hour. Well, thank you, Marcy, very much for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Marcy Whitebook, Director of the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at UC Berkeley, will continue with a Wisconsin focus. Ruth Schmidt, Executive Director of Wisconsin Early Childhood Association, is with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to Cassandra next for you, and she's in Green Bay. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
We have two small children. We've had them in child care, and, you know, we completely understand how these daycare providers are not being paid what they deserve. We have benefited so much from our children learning, but we're also paying almost double our mortgage for child care.
Mm.
And I also just want to say, if parents out there have never used the Young Star rating system, it is so, so beneficial. I cannot tell you, you know, I'll go online and look at a daycare center, and then I go and I look at Young Star and see their rating system, and that has absolutely led me one way or another to pick one daycare over another. It is so beneficial and so important for these parents to have something like this, and the state of Wisconsin is so lucky to have this.
Ruth, good work, Ruth.
Yeah, well, good on Young Star. It's a great system of standards, and I'm glad to hear that it's as helpful as it's been for parents.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just jump in and address just a little piece of part of what we find when we look at the Young Star ratings and compare education levels and earning of people who work in those different star-rated programs?
Sure.
This was part of our study. And so interestingly, what we find is as you move up the star ratings from a 2, 3, 4, 5, you do see an increase in the compensation level of people working in the child care classroom. However, the change that you see is from a starting wage of $9 an hour in a two-star program to a starting wage of $12 an hour in a five-star program.
Mm-hmm.
And so this isn't, there's not a broad spread there. It's a pretty tight, compressed compensation system that we have at play here. And when you take into consideration that in a five-star program, 73%, so almost three-quarters of the teachers who are working in five-star care in Wisconsin have at least an associate's degree or better and are earning $12 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just think about that for a minute, you know, you're comparing really this workforce in Wisconsin. If you have an associate's degree in Wisconsin, on average, you're earning about $38,000 a year. If you have an associate's degree and you're working in child care in Wisconsin, you're earning about $21,000 a year.
Quite a difference.
And so what, you know, how are we as a society willing to prioritize this education of our children and call for changes in public policy that will allow for financing of this type of a system differently so that we can see growth in our 4- and 5-star quality programs, knowing that we have better educated teachers, better environments, better curriculum at play with the kids, and in a way that's affordable for families? Because obviously we can't continue to just saddle the full cost of childcare on the backs of private pay families. At some point we need to understand there's a social responsibility at play here. This is the future of our workforce, the future of our economy in Wisconsin and the nation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Cassandra, for your call. Rhonda in De Pere. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an early childhood and an elementary certified Wisconsin teacher, and I left the classroom to write a book called Being School, and I interviewed daycare and preschool teachers, and they were averaging, like you said, $8 or $9 an hour. And then if you compare that to how we pay end-of-care life workers, it's the beginning and the end-of-life care. Why, as a society, we don't value them to pay them enough is just appalling. And then I had read somewhere that politicians won't raise minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, and they make like $172,000 a year. I don't know if that's right, but that's what I had heard. And I thought maybe a day in the life of that they should have to go and spend a day in these early learning centers and see the demands that are put on these mostly women professions.
Ruth.
Yeah. Another great point. And I think I would also point out that what you have at play here, too, is that the individuals that are doing end-of-life care are often also going to be your low-wage women in the workforce, your certified nursing assistants, home health care people.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have children, what are they doing to meet their child care needs? This is this critical issue. You're absolutely right. What is it about beginning of life and end of life that we don't value adequately to financially support the people who are ushering in new life and new learners into our state and helping to usher people out? I mean, I think that's, Rhonda, I think that's a really important point to pay attention to.
Yes, it is. And we've known about it for a long time. In a way, it's rather, I know you're doing work and you're making progress, but Ruth, it's such an obvious issue of unfairness and the importance of the profession and the importance of good child care for families. These are really big issues that have been with us, I'm sorry, for quite some time. And we're making progress inch by inch when you need a real overhaul, I think, of the whole system. So it's fair.
You do. And you know, Kathleen, I did just some very quick calculating several days ago looking at, you know, what would it take, really? What
Good.
Would the
All
public
right.
investment have to be?
What it would take?
All right. So here you go. In Wisconsin, if we just wanted to move the needle on what people who work in childcare who have an associate's degree are earning, and make it comparable to what people with an associate's degree in other fields in Wisconsin are earning, it would take an additional $1.5 billion annually to move the needle mm-hmm. on that compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you develop sort of the economic will, the political will, the public understanding of the value of why this is so critical? I think, you know, there's a lot that's been done on return on investment, and I think a lot of people understand, you know, you put a dollar in to really high-quality child care for the most at-risk children, you save $17 on the dollar later in life in public assistance savings and in special education savings, increasing high school graduation rates and home ownership and avoiding incarceration. So we know these things. It's truly looking at what examples can we find to try and even incrementally move the needle on this. So you have some states, for instance, Nebraska and Louisiana, have tax credits, both non-refundable and refundable tax credits. The refundable tax credits are for child care teachers who are working in high-quality child care programs.
Mm-hmm.
So that it is a way to say, you know, we can't close the gap. We can't completely eliminate this wage gap. But what we can do is provide a refundable tax credit to you. In Wisconsin, we have a program called the Reward Stipend Program. And the Reward Stipend Program, which is administered through WECA, is a program that gives out cash rewards. It's funded through Department of Children and Families. It gives out cash rewards annually to people who work in this field, reach a high level of education, and stay in the industry. The turnover rate in Wisconsin for child care between assistant teachers and lead classroom teachers is about 36%.
Ooh.
So, you know, every year you're losing 3 out of 10 teachers in child care. And mm-hmm. so clearly if we could find that $1.5 billion, you know, obviously I think that would go a huge way to changing what we see when you talk about turnover in this field and you say we have a 36% turnover rate of teachers and assistant teachers. The negative impact that has on children is hard to measure. I mean,
right.
It's really all of the work that is done on social-emotional learning, all the work that is done on protective factors and avoiding trauma, having an ongoing relationship with a nurturing adult is so, so critical. And when we have a fragile infrastructure of child care in our state where we're losing 3 out of 10 child care teachers annually from one program to another or other work, it's just, it makes for not the best situations for our children.
Right, exactly. Well, thank you for all the work you're doing and will you have done and will do, Ruth. Thank you for being our guest this hour. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Ruth Schmidt is Executive Director of Wisconsin Early Childhood Association and gave us important information about where we stand in the state of Wisconsin on this very important issue. Thanks for all of your calls. If you didn't make it on the air and if you have access to a computer, we do urge you to go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and write your comments there because they're important to be heard and we were just jammed with phone calls as we frequently are, so that's another place for you to leave your thoughts. Thanks to Chris Molina for producing this hour, KP Whaley for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Death of a Salesman is one of the plays at the American Players Theater this summer, Arthur Miller's classic. We'll talk with two of the lead actors in that program and hope you'll stay tuned. If you've been to that show or others over the years, we'd love to hear from you.